The next speaker at this winter educational conference of the Midwest Young Socialist Alliance comes to us from Detroit. He's a former editor of The Militant, a longtime activist in the Revolutionary Socialist Movement. He's speaking on what a minority can do. I give you George Brightman.
'63 was the most eventful year in the history of the American Negro struggle. And as it ended, people all over the country were stopping to assess what had happened, to think over what was done and what was not done, what was accomplished, what was not accomplished. And our comrade, Clifton DeBerry, the Socialist Workers Party candidate for president this year, had an opportunity at the end of 1963 to make a tour of most of the major cities in the North from one end of the country to the other, and to learn something about the thinking and the consciousness and the moods of Negro militants. And I met him soon after and asked him what was the most striking thing he had observed about their thinking. One of these was the slowness and difficulty in getting across the idea about how much the Negro people can do even though they are a minority, how much they can do on their own, alone and unaided if necessary. This seems to be a tough point to persuade people of, even people who are prepared emotionally to act alone if necessary. That is, tough to explain in a logical, convincing, theoretically convincing way. It is certainly one of the reasons why the idea of the Freedom Now Party has not yet caught on with more Negroes. Even when they know political action is necessary, many haven't yet been able to see how or if independent political action in the form of an all-black political party can promote their goals and achieve their aims. Now, why is it so hard for some even militant Negroes to grasp the full potentialities of determined and revolutionary activity of a minority, to perceive how vast the accomplishments of a minority can be, how they are capable of initiating changes that can transform the whole nation and thereby the whole world? I would say there are three reasons for this. First, the teaching, the influence, the education, the propaganda of the whole capitalist system, from the cradle to the grave, is directed to brainwashing the people and to convincing them that they must wait until they are a majority, that a minority can plead and beg, but that they cannot do anything, accomplish any big changes by themselves until they have the consent of the majority. Above all is this idea burned into the minds and souls of Negroes whose history is distorted or denied and who are made to feel not only that they are a minority but an insignificant minority, who have never amounted to much by themselves and who, without the stern supervision or benign direction of the great white fathers would hardly know how to flush a toilet. In other words, for Negroes to comprehend how much a minority can do, they must buck everything that they are taught from the beginnings of consciousness. They virtually have to make a revolution in their thinking. There is a certain irony in these things that are taught by the capitalists, because the truth is that the capitalists are a minority themselves. In fact, a much smaller minority than the Negro people. And yet this capitalist minority controls the whole country, lock, stock, and barrel, controls its wealth and means of production, controls its political structure, and even controls our very lives by their monopoly of the decisions of war and peace, and therefore is a living reputation of what it teaches us about the limits of what a minority can accomplish. The second reason why it is hard to see the truth about what a minority can do is because the present Negro leadership, almost in its entirety, is enslaved by the ideas promulgated and propagated by the capitalist class, repeats these ideas incessantly and like parrots, and does everything in its power to discourage the mass of the people from taking steps genuinely independent of all segments of the white majority. I'll return to these Negro leaders and their arguments in a moment. The third reason is that the radical movement, I would say the whole radical movement with but one exception, the Socialist Workers' Party, although approaching questions from a different standpoint than that of the ruling capitalist class, has failed to comprehend the essence of this question too. And instead of promoting and encouraging, both theoretically and practically, an understanding of the dynamics and potential of minority action, has on many occasions and in many ways misunderstood and even discouraged it. An example is their attitude to the Freedom Now Party. I do not know of a single organization in this country claiming to be Marxist or socialist or communist that supports the Freedom Now Party today, except the Socialist Workers' Party. The Communist Party, the Socialist Party of Norman Thomas, the Socialist Labor Party, the Progressive Labor Movement, not one of these favors the development of an all-black Freedom Now Party, independent of the power structure and of the two major parties. And if you trace back the causes, you will find them to be most un-Marxist, un-socialist, and un-communist failures to grasp the revolutionary implications of the independence struggles of the Negro minority. I want now to examine some typical arguments against such independent action by the present Negro leaders. When the Freedom Now Party was organized in Detroit a few months ago, for several weeks the press was very much concerned about it. And every big-name Negro who came to Detroit for several weeks thereafter was immediately cornered by the press and urged to make some statement against the Freedom Now Party. The one of these who arrived a few days after it was organized was Reverend Martin Luther King. And when they approached him, he made the following statement. I am opposed to anything or any party that teaches separation of the races because I am for integration. If the party is designed to get more Negroes interested in politics, fine. Otherwise, I can see no good that can come from an all-black party. One-tenth of the population will never be able to dominate nine-tenths. End of quotation. Now, in this statement, Reverend King is guilty of making a false counterposition between separation of the races, as he calls it, teaching the separation of the races, and integration. The Freedom Now Party does not teach the separation of the races. It recognizes that this is a society where the races are separate in fact, and attempts to utilize the existing separation imposed by capitalism in order to change society and do away with the exploitation made possible by this existing and imposed separation. King himself is well aware of this. King is a preacher, the head of a church, and that church happens to be all black. He doesn't reject or oppose this church because it is all black. He knows there is nothing racist about this church being all black. It's the result of living in a racist society. And in fact, he works through this all black church and tries to build it, and at the same time, he advocates integration. Now, why can't an all-black party do the same things as an all-black church? That is, utilize the separation created by racist society in order to weld together the black victims of racism so that they can work to end racism altogether. Why not? Why is it permissible in King's eyes for Negroes to pray together, but not permissible for them to join together in political action in the way they find most effective for ending their oppression? Shouldn't King, if he's logical and consistent, propose that Negroes give up their all-black churches, too, because they're not integrated? Posed this way, King might answer, "But we have all-black churches because it's the only kind available to us." And the answer of the Freedom Now Party could be, yes, and an all-black political party is the only kind available to us that we think has any chance of solving our problems. But King's other remark is even more revealing when he said, "One-tenth of the population will never be able to dominate nine-tenths." Maybe not, although I've already pointed out that 1% of the capitalists dominate 99% of the rest of us. But anyhow, that's not the issue posed by the Freedom Now Party. It is not the Freedom Now Party's goal for the Negro one-tenth to dominate the white nine-tenths. Just the opposite. Their goal is to keep the white nine-tenths from dominating the black one-tenth, which is a different thing. And how to do it? That's the difference between the Freedom Now Party and King. Can the minority end the domination of the majority by acting with complete independence from the majority, ideologically, organizationally, politically? Or must the minority adapt itself in tempo and in perspective to the prejudiced majority just because it is a majority, and not do certain things because the majority will not like it? That's the real difference between King and revolutionary Negroes, and that's why King prefers to misstate and misrepresent the issues in the way he does. Shortly thereafter, another noted figure came to Detroit. It was A. Philip Randolph, vice president of the AFL-CIO and president of the Negro American Labor Council. And he, too, dutifully came forward with a statement attacking the FNP. I'll just read the first two sentences of it. "Racial isolation in any form," said Randolph, "racial isolation in any form cannot register any influence on American political events. It is completely foreign to the political thoughts and actions of America." In his eagerness to damn the Freedom Now Party, Randolph here is really damning himself. What he calls racial isolation is all black organization for the purpose of ending the isolation of Negroes produced by a racist society. Randolph here is so blinded factionally that he forgets his own role, the thing that probably he will be best remembered for. Because it so happens that until Elijah Muhammad became prominent, Randolph, next to Marcus Garvey, was the leader to do the most for what he now calls racial isolation, that is, create all black organizations. The first March on Washington movement, which Randolph organized in 1941, we must never forget, was all black, and Randolph was foremost in insisting that it be all black. And that first March on Washington movement, even though it did not materialize in a march, because Randolph capitulated to Roosevelt and called it off, that first March on Washington movement in 1941 nevertheless accomplished more than the interracial march that took place last August, because it forced Roosevelt to issue the first FEPC order, which is more than the recent march resulted in. The truth is, contrary to Randolph, that all black organization, which he now mislabels as racial isolation, did more to influence American life than any interracial movement ever has done, and therefore is the very opposite of isolation. I think it's instructive that in order to belittle the Freedom Now Party, Randolph has to belittle himself or his own past, or that part of his own past which he has the most reason to be proud of. It seems to be characteristic of the Kings and Randolphs that they don't argue the question of independent minority action accurately, but have to mislabel and confuse and misstate the issue. And the reason for that is that their own position is so weak, basically. I will give only one more example of the kind of reasoning employed by Negro opponents of independent minority action. Again, from a statement issued shortly after the Freedom Now Party was organized in Detroit, by Alex Fuller, who is the vice president of a Negro and the vice president of the Wayne County AFL-CIO. And he said, "It is a serious mistake when minority groups, now on the threshold of making tremendous gains for Negroes, separate themselves from others who are working for the same objectives. We cannot afford to separate or isolate ourselves. We stand on the side of all democratic thinking people who believe and advocate first-class citizenship for everyone. We cannot do it alone." End of quotation. Translated, what Alex Fuller means is this: we can't get anywhere, we can't get anything, unless we remain in the Democratic Party. We must wait until the Democrats are ready. Just the opposite is the truth. Negroes will never get first-class citizenship in 1,000 years as long as their political power is tucked away in the vest pocket of the Democratic Party. If they have to depend on and wait for the Democrats or the Republicans, their children and their children's children will never have the taste of freedom in their mouths. Naturally, nobody in his right mind wants to separate from others who are working for the same objectives. But it is a lie, a foul and foolish lie, to pretend that the Democratic Party or the Republican Party has the same objectives as the Negro people. If that was the case, the present massive Negro revolt would have no purpose or meaning. The objective of the major parties is to quiet the Negroes with a few token concessions, while their objective is freedom. Surely there's a difference here.